We're going to be looking at Genesis 1 tonight. We're going to start going through Genesis. We're going to try to, if you're the kind of person who marks in your Bible, there might be some things along here that you might want to mark. We're going to try to make some connections between things as we go through. And we're going to dig a little deeper into these books than sometimes we do. I know especially with a lot of the Bible class material, they take 13 weeks and go through two of these large Old Testament books, like Exodus and Leviticus together, or Genesis, 50 chapters, and they do it in less than 13 weeks. And so you're really just kind of getting an overview. So I was hoping that we can spend some time and go through about a chapter every week, digging deeper into some of the meanings there, some of the implications of what the teaching there is. And so we'll start. I'm going to put the verses up on the screen from the English Standard Version. You have whatever version you have. And then I've got some notes of things that I wanted to bring out. And you're welcome to take notes or mark some things in your Bible if there are things interesting to you. And we'll try to make some observations about the book of Genesis as we go through. So Genesis begins with God already here. Genesis does not try to prove the existence of God. In the beginning, God. He was already there. There's no attempt to say, well, this is how God got here, or this is where God came from, or this is who God is. It's just right here. God is here, and He's going to start doing things in the very first verse. So there's no attempt at some sort of apologetics to explain how there's a God. It was just understood that there was a God already here. And we're going to learn a few things about that God as we go through the text. Now, we often say that on the first day God made light. But we see here that the night is already there in the first place. It's interesting, we often say that God created everything. But can you think of what God did not create? Tricky question, isn't it? Well, God didn't create nothing, because nothing was already here. And that's what was there. In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. The emptiness, the void of space, there was just nothing. And so in that emptiness, in that darkness, He creates the earth. Now, what He creates is the earth, according to this first verse, is not the earth as we know it. And we'll see that in verse 2. We also see Him creating the heavens. Now, the word heavens, we think of that as a plural thing, but we say, there are blue skies above. Well, there's only one sky, though, up there. So it's kind of one of those, we're kind of like pants. One of the kids was asking me yesterday, why do we call them pants plural when it's just one thing? Or a pair of scissors. But you ever have just one scissor? It's always together. But that's kind of the way it is with heavens. As we think about the heavens, we generally think of three different heavens. There's the heaven that is the sky, where the birds fly. Then there are the heavens that are outer space, where the stars and the planets all are. And then there's the heavens where God dwells. That's His home. Well, in this case, the only one of these that He's making here in verse 1 is outer space, the expanse of outer space. He's not going to make the sky until later on. And the heaven where He dwells, presumably He's already there. As far as we know, He's already existing in heaven at this point. So the only one that's under consideration here is really the first one. And the earth, we see in verse 2 and following, that this is already covered in water. So it's the planet Earth with its water is already created on the first night. Not days 2 and 3. Days 2 and 3 are involved in rearranging things and making them into a useful format. But right here at the very beginning, He creates the earth and the water that's on it. He didn't need to create darkness, because darkness is really just the absence of light, isn't it? We make all sorts of things to make light. We've got a projector putting light up on this screen. We've got all sorts of different kinds of lights. There are LED lights and fluorescent lights. And if you've still got a stash of the illegal incandescent bulbs, you know, there's that kind. You've got halogen lights. We've got fire. We've got all sorts of things that make light. Not to mention the sun and the light that it makes. But no one has yet figured out how to make something that puts out dark. That just doesn't work. You can't make dark. I can't have a little anti-flashlight that I turn on and it shines a beam of darkness into a room. It doesn't work that way. So the only thing that darkness is the absence of light. And so God did not create that as such. He only produced the light later on. Right. So right away then in verse 2, so in verse 1 we're already introduced to the fact that there is a God that's creating these things. In verse 2, we see a little more about the earth that has been created. It's without form and void. There's darkness already there. And it's over the face of the deep, or over the face of the waters. So there's already the waters here. And the Spirit of God is hovering above these waters as well. And so already in verse 2, we're introduced to the idea that God is different than we might first have perceived. God is not an entity that is all alone, so to speak. There is the Spirit of God that's also here, and yet also is of God, and so is God, and yet is separate in a sense, has his own identity. We're really introduced here to a second person within the Godhead. If we assume that the first time we realize, okay, there's a God, and this God, also there's a Spirit involved here. Then in verse 3, we see the power that God has. Speaking the sentence, let there be light, and there is light. When God says something, it's instantly done. The word instantly causes what has been spoken to occur. You know, I guess we couldn't have even come close to comprehending something like this until we came up with all of these automated controls that are voice activated that we have now. I think maybe if somebody wanted to be like God, they wanted to be able to say, you know, turn on the lights. And so the lights come on. And they wanted to do that because that was something, turn on the radio. Turn on the oven, turn up the temperature to this or whatever. And now they have these smart houses that are controlled by somebody just telling the different things in the house what to do, and the power of that spoken word. But God's spoken word wasn't just a matter of, well, turn on the lights that are already there. When He says, let there be light, there was no light before that in this world. Nothing shining around on this earth. And so He finally speaks it, and here it comes. The power of the Word of God is clearly seen. In verse 4, God sees the light, and the light is good. And then He separates this light that He's created from the darkness that's already there. Instead of just blending them both together so you have kind of a diffused light, He has a light part and a dark part, separates the two. And we see in verse 5 that the period of darkness is going to be called night. The period of light is day. And the evening comes first. This is why a lot of times we get confused when we're reading through the Old Testament especially, but even in the New Testament, in the Gospels sometimes, we're kind of confused about the order of events. And it's because, as Moses writes this down here, the Jews kept their time from evening first. It started at dark. And then after that came the light. We start, really odd. We start at midnight. That makes no sense. But if you started in the morning and went all day and then had your night after. But they started as soon as the sun set. That was the beginning of a new day. It's interesting that both the light part and the entire cycle are both called day. Shows kind of that the light rules over the darkness. The darkness doesn't have the power over the light, but the light has the power. He didn't call, he didn't say this is night and this is, here's evening and here's morning and we're going to call the whole thing night. He said we're going to call the whole thing day. And so it's an interesting thing that he does here. But we see his power. And we see this period of a nighttime, a darkness, followed by a light period, a daytime. That cycle, the first day, and every day like that thereafter, except for a few miraculous exceptions, like when Hezekiah and the day went backwards, or when Joshua and the sun stood still, or in the time of Jesus' death when there was darkness for 3 hours in the middle of the daytime. But other than that, the cycle has continued from this point on. Verse 6, God says He's going to make an expanse, a space. He makes the sky. He's going to separate water from water. He's going to put a bubble in the middle of the waters. Now, it's interesting because we don't really know. As he talks about these waters, we don't really know where one section of these waters is. We're going to talk about that a little bit more in a minute. But he wants to separate. He puts the sky, an expanse, a space there. Some people are confused because the King James Version uses the word firmament. And people think, well, it was something firm or hard. But that's not what that word means. It just simply means an expanse, a space in between two things. So God makes this expanse, this firmament, and He separates the waters under it from the waters above it. Now we might say, well, that's probably He's talking about the clouds where the rain falls. There are theories that even though that He actually put a canopy of water above the sky all the way around the earth. And some people have claimed to have disproven that. I don't know how they would have disproven it. They weren't there back then. But some would say then that canopy of water that was above the expanse is what came down for 40 days and 40 nights during the days of Noah's flood. It would be very hard to get 40 days and 40 nights of rain out of the clouds over the whole earth. You just can't get that many clouds, that much rain hardly. So where did all that extra water come from? And obviously, the water that was on the earth was not covering the whole earth. We'll get into that more when we get to Noah a little later on. But this idea that he put some of the water stayed on the surface and some was up above the sky. And God calls this expanse heaven. Now remember, he already created the heavens back in the beginning. Well, this is a different heaven. So he's got heaven number two mentioned here that he's created. And of course, neither of these is necessarily the one where he himself dwells, God's heaven. So this would be the one where God dwells is the one that Paul would refer to in 2 Corinthians 12:2. If you want to mark a little cross reference there, as we're talking about these heavens, 2 Corinthians 12:2, Paul refers to being caught up to the third heaven. And he talks about someone who did that, which a lot of people presume that that's actually Paul talking about himself, kind of cryptically. But this man that he knew was caught up into the third heaven and saw things that he couldn't talk about. And we can imagine if someone actually went to the heaven where God dwells. And so the indication then is that there are these three different heavens that are mentioned in the Bible specifically. And this then was the second day. This is the day He makes the sky. So before this, there seemingly was no air. There was no way for there to be clouds or anything like that above the earth and the surface. Then in verse 9, notice God doesn't create the land. Remember, He already created the earth and the water. It was already there back in verse 1. So here He's just reformatting things. He says, let the waters that are under the heavens, the ones under the sky, gather together into one place and let the dry land appear. So it seems as though He pushes all the water off to one side and the land just comes up out of the waters. It appears out of the waters, and it was so. And this seems to be the way that He does things here. The language indicates that also that there was one ocean. Now the King James Version again says He called that seas, S-E-A-S, not seas like you grab somebody, but seas like the water. And so, but that's not a problem either. The term seas would not necessarily mean multiple, because He does say let them be gathered together in one place. This kind of flows along with an idea that's also out there in the world, that at one time all of the land masses that are now separate continents were back at the beginning all together. One land continent, one body of water gathered together in one place. So that's an interesting thing to think about and consider. Of course, God calls the dry land earth. And this is the first time that, and here again, notice that He often is using the same term for different. He created the heavens and the earth already, but now that He's brought the dry land up, He calls it earth as well. And so a lot of times here in Genesis 1, we see the same word used, like the heavens, used multiple times for similar and yet somewhat different things still. So we call the planet as a whole earth, and we call dirt earth sometimes. So before this, there was no form. It was just kind of formless. You know how water just kind of, it's hard to shape water unless you freeze it, right? You can put it in a cup, but then you can turn around and you can pour it in a bowl, and you can pour it out on a plate. It goes everywhere. What's interesting here too is we have to realize what the earth looked like after God creates it here in Genesis 1. May have very little resemblance to what we see today. We know from 2 Peter chapter 3 verses 4 through 7 that the world before the flood was vastly different than the world after the flood. In fact, he talks about how the world that then was perished, being overflowed with water. And it's not the same earth that we have now. And then he warns us the earth that we have now is being held, just waiting for that day of fire that's going to come. But that's something for us to consider as well. Let me think about that. Then in verse 11, God said, let the earth sprout vegetation, plants yielding seed, the fruit trees bearing fruit, in which is their seed, according to its kind, on the earth. And it was so. It's interesting how much wisdom God uses in creation of the earth. In Proverbs chapter 8, wisdom herself speaks as though she's a person, even though she's just one of the attributes of God. But wisdom has existed as long as God has existed, because God is wise. God has always had wisdom. And so the wisdom speaking in Proverbs talks about being there when God created everything and how wisdom was used in the creation of everything. Verses 22 through 31 particularly talk about that in Proverbs 8. God is not a haphazard creator. It's interesting. If we assume that this is the first time He's created a world, He's really smart. Most of us, the first time we try to make something, it doesn't turn out real well, does it? We kind of get halfway through and figure out, oh, I did something wrong. Now, it's one thing if we're following a building schematic or a recipe or a pattern of some kind where somebody else has already done that. But if we try to just make something ourselves from scratch, we're going to make a mess of it the first time around, and we're going to have to fix it and patch it. But God got it right the first time around. We notice here that He makes things in the right order. He's got planning and forethought has gone into this. And He makes the things in the way that they need to be made. Can you imagine, for example, notice He goes ahead, He got the plants that have, and the fruit trees bearing fruit. Can you imagine what would have happened to Adam and Eve if God had put them in the garden and given them seeds to plant? What do you think would have happened to them? Well, they'd have starved to death before those plants got big enough for them to eat. Probably with a lot of them. You know, there's a few things that'll sprout in, you know, 12 to 14 days, and you might get some lettuce or spinach up. But, you know, if it's something that's bearing fruit, a fruit tree, or even something like a tomato plant or something like that, you're not going to get fruit off that thing before you starve to death if you had to plant the seed. You'll be in bad shape. And so God knows what He's doing. He's creating these things already ready for use. He knows already. He knows what He's going to do. And He's planning ahead and He's making it proper for that situation. We also notice here in verse 12, as the earth brings forth this vegetation, the plants with the seed according to their own kind, the fruit that has the seed in it. We see again, God creates the originals here and puts within them the power of procreation so they can reproduce. So He doesn't have to keep making new ones over and over again. He creates them with this already inside. And He does the same thing with the animals and the humans later on. And they're always going to reproduce after their own kind. Now, are there going to be some differences and some variations? Yes. We look around at the human race, there's a lot of differences and variations among us. But we all came from those two, Adam and Eve. And yet within them was the ability to reproduce an abundance of different varieties of within the human race. And so we see that same thing even, you know, within the apple tree that God created was the ability to have all the different kinds of apples that we have today. We've got lots of, you know, we've got everything from the Granny Smith apple that's really sour to the Honeycrisp apple that's really sweet. You know, we've got, and all sorts of different in-betweens. We've got all these different ones, all coming from apple trees, but all a little different. Some are green, some are yellow, some are red, you know. Some are splotched different colors. You know, we get all these things. But God created it to work that way. You can't plant corn and get an oak tree. You can't plant acorn and get a corn stalk. Even if it does sound like you could plant acorn and get... No, you can't plant an acorn. It doesn't work that way. We need to understand that God knew what He was doing. And we see that throughout this section. There again, that evening and morning, the third day. And again, we notice that the darkness first, evening and then morning, makes the day. In verse 14, God puts lights out in the expanse, out into space. And He gives some reasons. Notice what the purpose of these lights are. They're going to separate the day from the night. That's what they do today. Hasn't changed. They are going to be for signs for things. Lots of different signs for lots of different things. They're going to be for seasons and for days and for years. So every indication that he gives, the idea that's floating around that, well, you know, we had all of these millions of years was day one, and millions of years was day two, and no, day one was day one. It was day. The fact here that he says days in the same passage where he mentions seasons and years indicates that a day was a day. Now it might have been a slight, but you know, we say 24 hours, and it's a little off of that, a few seconds every. Every once in a while you see something. Oh, they added a leap second to the clock. Of course, we have a leap year next year coming up where we're going to add a whole day into the calendar to try to keep things right. But for the most part, it's pretty close to that standard that was set these thousands of years ago. And they're also to be lights, to give light on the earth. Now the stars don't give a whole lot of light, do they? But the sun and the moon certainly do. And he's going to talk about... it's interesting here though, this is the fourth day. And he's finally making lights to give light on the earth. What happened back on day one? Oh yeah, God created light. He said, let there be light. I have to wonder, he didn't make any light sources until the fourth day. How did we have light for those first 3 days? Where'd that light come from? There was no sun yet. There were no stars yet. Where did that light come from? Well, as far as we know, it just came from God Himself. God is light, the Bible tells us. So presumably he just let his light shine on the earth for a period of time each day. But we see that here. It's finally day four. Now here's the thing as we think about that. You might write down next to that Job 38 and verse 19. When God shows up in the book of Job and he starts questioning Job, there are an awful lot of questions that he asks Job that we still don't have the answer to. We're living here thousands of years of scientific advancement after Job, and we still can't answer a lot of those questions. And one of those is the one involving light. And he talks to Job about where the light comes from, what's the path that the light follows. Scientists, well, we know, you know, the light on the earth comes from the sun. Yeah, but it didn't always. Where did it come from before the sun? God knows things that we don't understand. And we have no concept of even how to begin to understand those things. He talks in there as well about where does darkness dwell. You know, it's an amazing thing. When you turn off a light... You know, we talk about the traveling at the speed of light, but the speed of light seems to be slow compared to the speed of darkness, because when the light goes out, the darkness is just there. It doesn't have to go anywhere to get there. It's just there, right? So, but there's a lot of those things. And you might also, 1 John 1:5, where it talks about God is light, mentioning there. Verse 16 then... We'll move along a little faster here. We won't get through chapter 1. The sun and the moon and the stars. Two great lights. The greater to rule the day, that's the sun. The lesser to rule the night, that's the moon. And the stars, of course. All three of these were created on the same day. not millions of years apart, like some scientists want to tell us. Not like evolution claims that, well, the sun is billions of years old and the moon is millions of years old. No. They were all created on the same day. And here we are, still. Why then does it appear that there are some stars that seem to be at different points of existence? You know, some are burnt out, and some have a lot of fuel left to go and haven't burned out. Well, there are a couple of possibilities here. One is that God created them at different stages of maturity, that He created them that way. Two is that they may have been created different sizes with different amounts of material available for burning, and some just burned out. You know, if we all went and bought it, every one of us went and bought a different candle, and then we all came together and we all lit our candles at the same time, some of those candles would last a lot longer than others, wouldn't they? Because somebody would get one of these big, humongous candles like this, and somebody else would get one of these little tea lights. And it would burn out. It would burn out of fuel. So it may very well be that God created the stars with different amounts of material, and so some burned out faster than others. We also see that they're different sizes. He may have created them to burn at different rates and in different ways. Remember, of course, that the only one that is necessary for our life here on earth is our sun. All the other stars really don't have that big of an impact on our life here on earth. But the sun does, and God's got it to last plenty long for our needs. I remember when I was a kid in school and they first told me, the sun is going to burn out. It's burning up all of its fuel and it's going to burn out. And I got scared. I was like, oh no, what are we going to do when the sun burns out? And they said, oh, it's going to last for billions of years or whatever. I'm like, then why are you telling me this? Why are you bothering me with that? It's not a threat to me. It's not a danger to me. But there are so many things that God could have made to give us the opportunity. Solomon says that God is it's God's role to make these secret things. And in his case, he says, and the king's role is to search out the mysteries, to search it out and figure it out. How many people love to explore and love to search and love to learn and love to try to figure out these things? And it's very possible that God, knowing how He would create man, gave us these things to be able to study about and learn about. How boring would it be if every star in the sky was exactly alike? How boring would it be if every planet was exactly alike? How boring would it be if every animal was exactly alike? If you got like dogs, what would you think if every dog was exactly the same as every other dog? What if every person was exactly the same as every other person? That'd get pretty boring pretty quick, and also really confusing. I mean, I wouldn't be able to tell my wife from somebody else's wife or my kids from somebody else's kids. That'd get really confusing. I wouldn't be able to tell myself from my kids. I'm confused enough as it is. I have enough trouble remembering their names. I don't know what I'd do if we were all exactly alike. God loves this variety. And He created this world this way for a reason. Verse 17, we see the final purpose here. The sun, the moon, the stars giving light on the earth. Of course, there weren't any city lights. About the closest thing they could have had would have been a fire, which doesn't really light up very far away, and it's really hard to travel with. And it burns out quickly, and you got to keep adding fuel. And so these things do that for us. Verse 18, the pattern of day and night is so important. God continually mentions this here. So important, this over and over again, this pattern of day and night. For mankind and for plants and for animals, this cycle is necessary. Any of you ever worked the night shift for a long period of time? It really messes with you though, doesn't it? Because your body's just not designed to sleep in the day, and we're not nocturnal animals. Now, nocturnal animals love it. They love the nighttime. They're out and about in the night while we're supposed to be sleeping. But God created different animals to do different things and different plants. The plants need the darkness and they need the sunlight. If it was sunlight all the time, that'd drive us crazy too. And if it was dark all the time, well, that wouldn't be good for us either. So God knew that we needed this pattern, this rhythm that we get into of day and night. And it, you know, we see how it fluctuates. In the wintertime, it's dark more. Then in the summertime, it's light more. And this pattern, our bodies get used to that pattern that God created. And He separates this light and darkness, and He saw that was a good thing to have it that way. Verse 19. So here we are, two-thirds of the way through the creation, and there's nothing but plants living. Here we are. And it's so far, it's just stars and sun and moon shining on a planet with nothing but some plants on it. And yet we see here that logically God also created some plants both on the land and in the water. Water plants, seaweed type things, those kinds of things as well would have been there. Because then in verse 20, He finally gets around to the living, moving type creatures that we usually think of as living creatures. Let the waters swarm with living creatures, and let the birds fly above the heavens, across above the earth, across the expanse of the heavens. So here we have, finally. Now, of course, I don't know, if you've ever taught kids, you probably showed them the pattern. Day one was light, day four is the things that make the light, sun, moon, and stars. Day two, you've got the water separated and the air, and then day five, you've got the birds and the fish. And day three, you've got all of the land and plants and everything ready. And then day six is going to be when the animals and things that are going to need those are created. Have you ever noticed, though, who the main character through all of this is? Something for us to really realize throughout the Bible, from the very beginning, the main character is God. It's not man. It's not us. We're not even hardly worthy of calling supporting actors and actresses in this thing. God is the focal point. He's the one from the beginning that's there. He's the one creating these things. In Colossians it says that all things were created by Him, talking about Jesus Christ, and for Him. Everything that's being created was not created for us. Everything that was created, including us, was created for Him. So we need to keep that in mind. If I keep going, we're not going to make it. Y'all going to be here late and be mad at me. And okay, so I'll tell you what, we'll do verse 21 and then we're going to quit for the night. So verse 21, God creates the great sea creatures, every living creature that moves, and with the waters swarm, all according to their kinds, every winged bird according to its kind, God saw it was good. And this repetition again and again of God seeing that these things are good. It's so good. So all the living creatures of the sea and the air, from the microscopic amoeba all the way to the enormous blue whale, largest creature as far as we know that ever lived, and it's still alive today. You know, people are worried about the dinosaurs being extinct, but the biggest creature that ever lived is still here. That's the blue whale. From the tiniest flying insect that's just over a tenth of a millimeter to some birds and possibly even flying dinosaurs that are extinct now, that according to our fossil records had wingspans up to 23 feet. That's pretty big. That's really big. That's a wingspan about double the length of the pew you're sitting on. Well, if you're sitting on one of the longer pews, these shorter pews, it's not even close to, it's more than that. You know, but we're talking huge wingspans. And these monstrous creatures, as large as the enormous world, and all the way down to those teeny tiny microscopic things. And God made all of them, everything in between. Imagine the creative genius to go into making all of those different things, making them all where they work together, all of them where they have something to eat, all of them where, you know, that something's feeding, so that nothing is out of balance. You ever had a fish tank or tried to make a little fish pond? And you see how quickly things get out of balance and the algae takes over everything? Yet God created a world that was in balance with everything that it needed to keep going and to keep sustaining itself in the way that He wanted it to. God created the skies and the seas to be inhabited by these creatures. And He did that. And all perfectly. All the way He wanted it to be. God doesn't make mistakes. We'll see next week, of course, what He planned for that land. He had plans for it too, for the plants that were on the earth. We probably could guess at what those are. But we need to think about God's plans. As we think about it, think about as He's creating all of these things. The Bible also tells us that Jesus is the Lamb slain from before the foundation of the world. Here we have Him planning all these things out, and we're amazed by that. And with good reason. It's pretty amazing what He did. But He's making another plan. He's planning for all the way down through the centuries. He hasn't even made a human being yet, but He already knows that those human beings He makes are going to rebel against Him, and they're going to need to be redeemed. And He's already got that plan in place before He even starts making them. Isn't that amazing? Are you part of that plan? Have you taken advantage of the plan that He made to bring us back to Him? Have you turned your life over to Jesus Christ? You repented of your sins and confessed Him? Been buried with Him in baptism to wash your sins away? Do that tonight if you haven't. If you have done that, but perhaps you've not been living your life for Him. Maybe you've been thinking that all of these things that are here are for you to enjoy. And to some degree they are for us to enjoy. He wants us to enjoy the world He made. But it's not about us. It's about Him. Have you been selfish with your life instead of giving it all to Him? If you have a need to respond for any reason, please do so as we stand and sing.